Welcome. This is your host, Clint Locklear. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done a show. Me and Jeff Dunlap has been putting on a trapping school up in Iowa, and internet was rough. And then, we hadn't had Man Strong either, so there hadn't been Trapping Radio or Man Strong. I got back a couple of days of trying to get my feet back under me. So what we're going to do is a combination of a Man Strong and a Trapping Radio tonight. And you'll see that it kind of fits in both of them. Because what I want you to think about as we get into the main topic tonight is if you want to be good, you get to pick what it is good at. But if you want to be good, you got to learn to think and live like a Navy SEAL. I'm not talking military. I'm not talking about shooting guns, even though that could be one of the things. I'm talking about thinking and living like a SEAL. They're some of the best in the world, and it's not because of what they do on the battlefield. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk just a few minutes on some Man Strong stuff. We're going to talk about the school and the convention. And then we're going to talk about trust but verify when it comes to new trapping ideas and some things and a couple of different ways to log, because at the school it became clear me and Jeff do things a little bit different, which we knew, but it was really obvious on one of them. So I want to go over that because I think that'd be helpful to everybody. But before we do, I want to thank our sponsors. Sponsor for Man Strong is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. He's got everything you need for trapping. He's got everything you need for fishing and hunting and predator calling and all kinds of cool stuff. He makes the knives. He gets the knives that are made out of actual trap springs. I use one all the time. Great steel in those things. Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. That's the dude you want to be dealing with. Now I want to thank our sponsors for Trapping Radio. We have F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Most of y'all know who F&T is. They've been around for a while. They have a TV show. They come to the conventions a lot, different things like that. A really good company. Ralph and Sean run that. The guys that are in the back do a stellar job. It's an immaculately ran business that really is somebody you can trust. When you get an order in, they track everything, and I mean everything. So if there's ever a question, they have it at their fingertips. They have good prices, lots of different products. You can find all of my stuff at F&T if you're looking for a paper catalog, or Funky Trap Tags and Supplies for that matter. Then we have Dunlap Lures, which is my buddy Jeff Dunlap. We were holding a school and convention with. He's continued on his dad's legacy of making lures. He's really good at it. He really likes to put good products out. He really likes to help trappers. And anybody, if you find out, went to the school, you'll find that out pretty quick. But if you're looking for a lure you can trust, Dunlap Lures is somebody that you can trust. And we have Oki Cable and Trap Supply. I believe they're in a convention right now in Arkansas. I'm not sure exactly where, but you could probably look it up. You know, he's got a full trapping supply store. A lot of times he's got some meat and glands and buckets and just all kind of things. Jeb's just a wheeler and dealer. And if you're looking for some stuff, give Jeb a call at Oki Cable and Trap, because he's just a good dude to deal with. Basically, that's what it is. And then we have, again, Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. He sponsors both shows. So let's get that out of the way. So I want to start a little bit with some Man Strong stuff. And we're going to use this as a quote. I saw this on a video, and I cracked up when I saw this. And it fits the Man Strong mantra, I guess, or mindset pretty dang straight. You got a mechanic sitting under a car changing his oil. And he looks over at the camera and he goes, if you don't know how to change, if you think you're a man and you don't even know how to change your own oil, but you think because you grew a beard that makes you a man, just keep in mind vaginas grow hair too. I think there's a big lesson in that. If you want to be really manly, where your wife will see you that way and a girl will see you that way. Be able to do some stuff besides social media and groom your beard. See what he's saying there? There's a big confusion now what a man is in this country. I think that separated it pretty quick. Now, another thing that I've noticed a lot of with watching different social media that blows me away, and if you're doing this, I'm going to ask you to stop. Guys, if you think you're an alpha male, don't say it. Don't say it. If you think you're a beast, don't get on video and say that. You look silly. If you think you're a savage for whatever reason, because of, you know, hardcore trapper, or what you do in the weight gym, or an athlete, or whatever you do for a living, guys, it sounds funny and silly and childish when a grown man says that about himself. It just doesn't work. If you have to proclaim what you are in the bigger scheme of life and in the world, you have to proclaim that to people. There's a good chance you're not it. You see, alpha males don't go around telling everybody they're alpha males. Everybody knows they're alpha males. When they talk, the way they act, the decisions that are made, the way they don't bully people, the way that they try to bring people up in different ways to make them better instead of their self. It's not how big and strong you are. It's not how loud you are. It's not if you can intimidate others. That doesn't make you an alpha male. That makes you a freaking bully. And that is the opposite of a mature alpha male. And I hear people all the time saying that they're beast. A lot of times this is to do with athletics, weight room. I've heard it with trapping. If you're saying it, it ain't so. And the thing about the savage, I want you to, you know, I hear this a whole lot in the fitness industry. We're savages. Be a savage. Do all that. Well, when someone says that, see, it's very different. If you're in a group of people and someone else goes, that dude over there, he's freaking alpha. Everybody knows it. Dude, that dude worked. He's a beast. Totally different. Or the way he goes about that, he's just a savage. See, that could be very true. But when you call that to yourself, I want you to remember what the last word of savage is, and that's badge. Because if you say it about yourself, there's a good chance the last part of that has more to do it than the whole word. And in trapping, we have words that you should never say that you are. Because if you do, I guarantee you, you're not. See, I've met some wolfers in my lifetime. Craig O'Gorman is one of them. He's got a book called Hoofbeats of a Wolfer. I've got a book, Eastern Wolfer. Nowhere in there do I claim to be a wolfer. Nowhere in there did Craig claim to be a wolfer. I'm seeing that, especially after I wrote my book, the wolfer terminology has come out a lot more in trapping. That is not something you call yourself. That's something that other people can call you if you're at that level. And I do not consider myself a wolfer. And I'm sure as hell not going to say that I think I'm a wolfer. But if someone else thinks that I am and calls me that, that's a great compliment. But it's not because I said it, promoted it, advertised it, marketed it. Not very cool. So be careful of what you say, especially because we're on the man strong part of this, especially if you want people to believe it. You don't say you're the greatest. I'm the greatest trapper in my state. That's bullshit. Anybody that says that, I know damn well that's bullshit. You're the best. I see that on all kind of marketing when it comes to ADC and different things like that. No, No. You could ask anybody that's in weightlifting. They know there's somebody out there stronger than they are, because there is. You can ask any MMA fighter. They can have all the titles in the world, but they know if they pick on the wrong dude at the wrong time, they're going to get their butt kicked. So they're not really the best in what that terminology actually means. In weightlifting, I hear things about the strongest man, strongest woman, strongest age, strongest weight class, different things like that. If someone else says it, I think it's fine. If you say it to yourself, dude, it's so immature. Just don't do it. It's weird that someone's got to say something like this, but the way that our almost seems like our normal today is just a bunch of BS adjectives about something, and it just don't be that guy. So one of the things, when I was at school this week, I didn't do it when the students were there because we were busy pretty much from the time we got up to the time we went to bed. But we had off days before they got there, in between classes and before the convention. And this is the first time I've really tried to work out and not be in my home gym with my squat racks and belt squats and reverse hypers and all that stuff. You know, all the bars and plates and all that. I was amazed what I could get done with very minimal equipment when I was on the road. So everything that I had, pretty much, I took all of my bands. I've got red and black bands and green bands from Westside Barbell. I've got a purple one that I bought at probably Dick's Sporting Goods or Academy. So I had those bands with me. I took my little cable setup that, if you don't know what that is, you can go to Spuds, S-P-U-D-S, .com, and they sell a cable system that I've got. I took that down there, and you really get creative with that thing. And then I took some kettlebells and a couple of dumbbells, and while I was down there, me and Jeff, because I always stop at sporting goods stores now, see if they've got dumbbells, and if they do, I buy them, because those things are kind of like golden eggs, it seems like. So I picked up a 50-pound rubber-plated dumbbell down there. So that was the biggest thing that I had. I took a 25-pound plate, I think 3 10 plates, and a 5-pound plate. That's all I had. Had some different handles and different things. Everything fit in a bag and in the floorboard of my truck. And what I did was a push and pull day. So I did back, which bands will smoke you on your back, and it's very cheap. I'm going to be doing some videos for a friend that I'm going to start a podcast, YouTube channel on, just to help out a friend. He's starting to get into this, and I want to make sure he does it right. And I did, I did biceps and stuff with the dumbbells, and I did, when I was doing the back, it was a mixture of one-armed, because I only had one 50-pound dumbbell, which, what I found out something is, I could get an extra stretch on my chest. So I had a really good chest workout between just single-arm dumbbell presses off a picnic bench and different varieties of push-ups. I was actually sore, and the week before that, I'm easily handling 315 for several sets. That really smoked my chest. I was amazed. And then on traps with a big green belt from Westside Barbell, it's probably a 100 to 120 pound band. I would step on it and do shrugs for traps. I could do, put it around something and do kind of, where you bring your shoulders back together for your inner traps. I had the cables so I could do face pulls. I did planks. There's not a whole lot you can do like deadlift or anything. So that was, between that was chest, so that's push and pull. And within an hour and a half, dude, I was smoked. And then the other one, I just did arms and shoulders. With the bands, the cables, the light stuff, a little creativity, making, slowing stuff down, not worrying about weight, really feeling the movement. It was really good. So if you don't have your gyms closed and you don't have a private gym like I do, there's still no excuse not to stay in shape. Because if you're a trapper, trust me, you will love trapping more in shape than you will if you're out of shape. Everything you do in life is easier when you're in shape. From getting off the toilet, to having sex, to doing something out in the woods. It's just easier. So don't think that you've got to spend a whole lot to do that. And, you know, I just hooked the bands up on a there are picnic tables underneath this covered, like a little pole barn, you know, like a pavilion. I found some bolts to put the strap for the cables on there so I could do things with that. It worked out great. So don't let not having a gym or a gym to go to, because probably everything I used down there was probably $300 total. Pretty cool. Now, I've got several things I want to get to before we get to the main subject. This is a little more serious. I've had a couple of episodes on Trapping Radio where I've talked about the coming coup with the election, which is becoming more obvious. And I just want to lay out a few things for you to start noticing that's starting to happen at a more rapid pace. So when you hear this, you got to understand what's going on. Because if you need to go back and listen to that show if you don't know what I'm talking about, because I explained how we overthrow governments in different countries and how that's being used against us, and I don't quite know what that's going to be like after the election. Then I talk about some of the Democratic plans where they've been open and honest about it, everything. They're still going to cause massive chaos if Trump wins big, all the way till if it's close, and it gets crazier as the list gets closer. So there's going to be massive chaos. And part of the way that they're ensuring this, and you're going to start hearing more and more of this coming up, so you just at least have this in your head, so you can recognize what's going on, so you can make good decisions. All over the country right now are leagues of greasy lawyers that are suing everybody in many, many multiple states. They're getting it where you don't have to have a postmark on a mail-in ballot. Some states you don't even have to have a matching signature or a signature at all. They're pushing back the dates in these states when it has to be counted. Not even if it was, you know, on the third where everybody votes, but how far can you stretch that out? All these lawsuits are for one particular reason. Sure, it's to do what the Democrats mostly do, and they cheat any way that they can. You don't have Republican lawyers going out doing this. You've got Democratic lawyers going out doing this. The whole purpose is so when the night of November 3rd happens and the actual coup starts, and which possibly could turn into an American Civil War, because with all the chaos that's going on, with the, what you're going to see ramping up, you're going to see all of these, you know, protests spontaneously. Keep that word in mind. You're going to hear it all over the news. That's what we say when we're in different countries. And there's going to be a lot of burning and rioting and beating and everything like that going on. It's going to get more chaotic because I have to give credit to the liberals on this. They're pretty slick about what they're doing. I mean, they're following what the military does and the CIA and NSI and all that. What they do, NSA, when we go to overthrow somebody in another country, they're doing it on us, but actually they're doing it better. All the laws that are being pushed right now by all these lawyers and all these courts and all these different states, Pennsylvania's a huge one, Wisconsin's a huge one, Nevada's another one. It's so there's no way to figure out what the vote count actually is. So what they're doing is they're creating the problem so bad with the way the mail-in voting is going to be done, that it's going to be like other places that's already done it for smaller elections, and they still don't know who won. It's on purpose, guys. It is being done on purpose. So they're causing this issue to have all this chaos that they can use the chaos to cause more chaos to hopefully people break. And when there's enough chaos in this country, because we've never seen anything like this, most people are going to be looking towards relief. When this starts, I make a bet with anybody out there, you're going to watch the stock market tank. That's going to stress out a whole lot of people, because even if you're pension at your business, that's based on the stock market. Your 401k is based off the stock market. The stock market is going to see massive chaos, and the stock market does not like uncertainty. So it's going to seem like all of a sudden, after the election, the economy is going to go to shit. It's planned, and they're setting it up right now. The other thing that you're going to see happening, which I've already heard a couple of senators talk about, because this is the way this game is played, they want to break up California into 4, 5, or 6 different states, so they got more senators, so there's no way a Republican will ever win an election again. You're going to start hearing all kind of reasons for this. You're also going to start hearing that Washington, D.C., which is not a state, nor should it be, needs to be a state so that the Democrats get more senators, because Washington, D.C. is always going to be liberal, like California. And then you're going to have Puerto Rico, which is very liberal. If you look at the amount of people that are on government assistance down there, it's crazy. They want them to be a state so they can get 2 more senators. And you're going to see them push for this. If Trump wins, you're going to start hearing things about California and Oregon and Washington succeeding, which is going to put a lot of stress on a lot of senators and congressmen. I know me and you would go, hey, let them go. America, and I believe this, would be better off without California, without Washington, and without Oregon. Now, you good people that are in those states, I don't know what that means for you. But if Trump wins, you're going to start hearing secession from those states. And all this time is going on because of what the lawyers are doing now, everybody is going to be saying that their guy won and nobody knows. And then Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter has already come out and said that if you start questioning whatever the Democrats say about the election, you're going to be banned, including Trump. Twitter and Facebook have already basically said they're planning on banning Trump from any type of social media. So no one's going to know who won. Both sides are going to be saying that they won. Both sides are going to be claiming fraud, because that's what the Democrats are setting up, is massive fraud just for the purpose of the chaos for this to happen. And what does it mean? Who really knows? I've never lived through a coup/revolution in America. Don't know. But when you start seeing all this chaos happening, just think back and go, okay, this is part of the game. This is the plan. I need to make decisions based off of logic and not emotion. That's the reason I'm telling you this. You don't have to believe it, but you're going to start seeing it, and you're going to go, maybe that dumb redneck's not as dumb as I thought he was. Because I've been in the military, and I know how this works. Now to a more fun topic. The school that we just had. That was a freaking blast. The first class was dry. And so what we did is Jeff took half the students, I took half the students, we went our own way, then we flipped after lunch and we did that again. What me and Jeff figured out, this is kind of like an after-action review for you that are maybe thinking about coming to the school, or if you're ever thinking about putting on a school, think about this. What me and Jeff figured out, it was better when me and him were together. Because I could hear what he was saying, and I could put an input if I was asked. He could hear what I was saying, and he could put an input or bust my balls on it or whatever he wanted to do with it. And it worked out, I think, much better for the students. Because my locations, micro locations, are very different from Jeff's. But our location travel ways are actually pretty similar. Jeff was off doing something, and I put a set in, or showed how to do a set. And this was a big field with lots of stuff going on. And then when Jeff picked the location, we were 18 inches apart, and he had no idea where I sat. So the coyote, the idea of catching the coyote and how that works is a great lesson. We our sets are different. The way I work on control is different from Jeff. He likes being more out in the open. I like to have more structure and texture, which we talked about probably a month ago. But we both knew where the coyotes were at, and we sat within 18 inches of each other. See, there's the lesson there for trappers should be astounding. What me and Jeff both know are coyotes. What we weren't concerned with is the set, or maybe 4 or 5 feet to catch that coyote. We both knew where the coyote was going to be, which is most important. And if you get to talk to someone from the school, you'll get this reiterated to you. We're not catching animals by setting sets. The goal of the trapper is to be able to catch the animal from the habits of the animal. And if you were going out and just slamming traps in on features without thinking about travelways, and we've talked about this many times, you're a set trapper. You have a certain way that when you think that you're close enough, you do a set in a certain way. Very rarely do most people actually put the coyote into the equation of how to catch, or how the coyote is going to react to the set. They think the set is the key. The set is not the key. The animal is the key. The animal is the key. And its students saw that from two different totally styles for me and Jeff over those 2 days. We had a blast at night around the fire pit. If you hadn't been to my YouTube channel, please go check it out. I'm going to have a couple more stories around the fire that is hilarious. You're going to hear about alpacas, trophy Himalayan alpacas, played as a joke. Pictures are there to prove it. There's another one where I picked the same guy to put in a set. The way he described it, I was about to pee my pants. And then he talks about basically how not to have gun safety rules, because it's amazing he's got legs left. So that's going to be on YouTube. And then, we set up, we talked around the fire, which was always, would be about stories or trapping and stuff like that. So the school, I'm pretty sure from everybody we talked to, thought it was a huge success. And me and Jeff both heard normally by 11 o'clock of the first morning that people's minds were blown. It's not that me and Jeff do things to blow people's mind. It's this: me and Jeff had a tendency, like most trappers that think about animals, they just look at things in such a different way. When guys saw how I controlled coyotes at a set, and they could see it at a set. You could see light bulbs going off. When Jeff would do similar things, but in a more open situation than his sets, you would see light bulbs going off. From big structure to little structure. It was just really cool to see other trappers see that light bulb. So I didn't have any negative anything from a student there. And everybody seemed to be super happy. And a lot of them already planning on coming back next year. Which I'm not, you know, I guess it'll be a refresher because I don't think me and Jeff's going to change a whole lot in 1 year. But I understand why they're doing it. Then we had the convention, which was not as many people as we were wanting. But, you know, this was a last-minute thing that we kind of threw together. We were already up there. Only thing we talked about it was on this show, Jeff on Facebook, me maybe once on Facebook. But it was, to me, one of the cooler experiences of a convention that I've had in several years. Now, if me and Jeff ever do another one, we have no idea. Because I can tell you, mentally, after doing the school and then trying to run a convention, that's too much mental energy being used. For 2 days, I didn't do nothing when I got home. I was just like a zombie. And Jeff, I talked to him yesterday, he was the same way. So if we do a convention, it won't be after the school. I'm not sure if we will or we won't. But it seemed to go pretty good. We had really good demos. Because, you know, it's probably only like 30 guys at a time. We even had some great demos in the gym when it was raining. But the camaraderie of a smaller convention that wasn't based off of just trying to sell whatever you can sell with the most amount of dealers there and try to help people the most we could on conventions. And most of the people that came there stayed at night and just sat around the fire. Probably a little bit too much drinking. A lot of headaches the next morning. But it was fun. And I remember those type conventions 20 years ago. Somehow they've changed. And it was really cool for me and Jeff to be part of one of those older style conventions again. So that's kind of a rundown of everything that we've been doing. Now I want to get into the main topic of the show. Live and think like a SEAL. Most people, when they think of a SEAL, they either think of BUDS, you know, where they go through Hell Week, or they think about these elite warriors that are jumping out of airplanes at 15,000 feet, you know, hooked onto submarines, going underneath the water. They show up. They get the mission done. They do it with such professionalism. They can, you know, do anything with explosives. They can do anything with guns. Hand to hand, they're strong, they're fast, they're nimble, they're smart. And most people think of SEALs as of what, when they think of them that way, is what they do in a firefight or in combat. But guys, that is not what makes a SEAL a SEAL. That is not what makes a Ranger a Ranger. And that is not what makes Special Forces Special Forces. That's kind of like a game when they go into combat. There's real score because real people die. But what they do there is only because of the training that they do before. You want to know what makes a SEAL such an elite warrior or Ranger or Special Forces or the guys that go get the Air Force guys that go behind enemy lines and get the pilots back? It's the training. It's the training. Before the missions, they do mock-ups and they train and they train and they train. It's not off the seat of their pants. That's not the way the military works. If they're not in a combat zone, they're training every day. I'm talking serious training. Mental training, physical training, psychological training. They're getting tougher every day they train. So when they get to the mission's probably not going to be as hard as the training. So what does this have to do with men or trappers? It has a lot. There's a lot of ways to think about this. And it's not because of go time that makes them what they are. It's the training that makes them what they are. If you want to be the best coyote trapper you can possibly be, the training to do that is what's going to make you do that. What you do on a trap line is not what makes you become that good. See, I can sit here and talk all about coyotes. Why? I can talk about their life cycles. I can talk about the different things they eat at certain times of the year. I can talk about how they move through an area. I can talk about how they work sets because I've ran so many cameras on them. I've been in lots of different states training. I've been watching video like a pro football player watches tape of the people they're going to be playing next week. I go out and I find tracks and I follow them. I try to guess where they're going to go. See, that's training. I read, I find more value personally in older books about coyote trapping because a lot of that knowledge was very hard won and very intelligent. It's just not as sexy as the stuff that we do today. But when I read that, I'm training. When I go out to put in sets, I look at every set that I put out to catch an animal like it's training. Because if you don't, I think you're going to be sloppy. But every time I bet a trap, since I'm looking at it from the point of view of training, I want to put that trap in the absolute best way that I can. And if something pops in my head that may work better, I jump on it immediately and see if it does anything. I try to pay attention and set the sets up where I've got some control over the coyotes so I can see how they're coming into the set. Now, students at the school, until they saw this several times, it was a struggle for them to understand what I was saying. Once they could see it in their head, because that's what I had to do for several years, it started becoming more obvious to them. They could start seeing it. See, what these guys at the school were doing were training. BSing around a campfire at night about certain subjects, that was training. Conversations around the meals, that was actually training to the guys that paid attention, and most of them did. So if you want to perform like a SEAL, game day is not what you're prepared for. Training is what you prepare for. And I know this is not sounding sexy, but the end results of it is. So if you want to be the best coyote, you need to learn everything you can about coyotes. You need to be able to distinguish garbage information from good information. You need to make sure that every set that you put in is super high quality. See, in weightlifting, if you talk to really good powerlifters, their warm-up sets to them, so like someone's benching 500 pounds. When you talk to the guys that are top of the game in powerlifting, you start hearing this thing over and over again. You never do junk sets. So when they put 135 on the bar to someone that benches 500 as they're warming up, they put as much effort technique and mental concentration in the warm-up set as they do when they're benching their max at 500 pounds. But you go to an average gym and you watch people warm up. They're on their phones in between. They're just throwing weight around. Their technique is all over the place. They're not training. Professionals train. And that's the way I want you to think about your trapping. See, training has a lot to do with efficiency. How you put your set in. Your brain should constantly be trying to reevaluate what you're doing, how you can cut energy away and time away from what you're doing at a set. At the school, I was very clear. Your job as a trapper is to be the best trapper you can be at the same time as the laziest trapper that you can be. And if you're at the school, that became very clear pretty quick. I don't burn extra energy unless I have to. And I don't want the students of mine to ever burn extra energy because it doesn't make any sense to do that trying to catch animals. But when I see very complicated system and sets, lots of energy being used, dragging stuff around, too much gear in the truck or the four-wheeler, not knowing exactly what set to put in because you're thinking about sets instead of the animal. Training. Locations. You got 365 days a year. Animals leave tracks. They leave droppings. Get off the couch and go put some time in on the training range of tracking animals. The better you are at picking their travel ways without having to go find tracks, it's a game changer. Now, what about if you're in business? You want to know who succeeds in business? Guys that train. I've said over and over again, if you want to be very successful, you need to read. I don't even think books on tape are the same. But you can try that. I have read hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of business books, strategy books, marketing books, branding books, internet SEO books. It's all training. So if you're competing against me, and it seems like I'm always just a little bit better at business than you are. That's the reason. I'm always learning. I'm always training. So if you want to be good in whatever business or revenue stream that you want to do, and you think just because it's a cool idea that all of a sudden money's going to fall down in your lap, without the training that goes along with learning about business, guys, you're going to have a rough time. Can you name anything that you do of importance that training would not help you? I doubt you can. Fishing is the same. Deer hunting is the same. You think you're a turkey hunter? Go talk to Chip Davis about turkeys. That boy has put the time and the training when it comes to turkeys. I don't really care about turkeys. I know more about turkeys and casual conversation with Chip than probably most people that spend all that money and all that time going turkey hunting. Chip just shows up in states and he'll be with 24 hours. He's got a turkey on the ground. He's almost killed a turkey in every state that you can kill one in the United States of America. He does it in a day or two because he's put the training in. He knows all about them. He knows how they move, where they roost, different trees, how they're going to come out of the woods into fields, how they're going to react to his calls. It's training. I've known people like that with deer. They know more about deer than the deer know about deer. And it's practical stuff. Another thing that seals do that most people have a hard time with is consistency. So you can do training haphazardly and get some value out of it. But to be good at anything, you have to be consistent. When you talk to people that are very successful in business, they're very consistent about their training and learning. And then they put it to practical use. And then they sit back and they evaluate. And then they adjust their training and they move forward again. But they do it on a very consistent basis. The reason most guys look the same after a year of being in the gym is they're not consistent. They're not consistent in what they do in the gym. They're not consistent in how they eat. They get frustrated and they quit. They're not any stronger. They're not any bigger. They're not any sexier. They're not anything else except they've spent a lot of time in a gym doing something. A lot of trappers are the same way. A lot of trappers do the same thing today they've done 20 years ago. And if that case is for you, either you're the best trapper that's ever walked the face of the earth, and you know everything there is to know about trapping and animals and how temperature's different, seasons are different, ground's different, pressure's different. All if you know everything there is about every aspect of animal, that's the only way you should be trapping the same 20 years different. Because when we were at the school, the students brought up several times, well, in a video, you did this. Yeah, that's what I was doing back then. I've learned more since then. And I heard Jeff have to say that several times, too. So we're not being the same. That comes from consistency. Consistent working, consistent changing, consistent everything in the aspects of training. Consistency, when you get tired, has to be the same as it was when you were fresh. It takes a lot of discipline to be like that. That's how the SEALs are what the SEALs are. Training and consistency. It's not a bunch of motivational speaking. It's not that they're born that way, because if you ever talk to SEALs or Special Forces or anything like that, none of them were born that way. They were determined to become that way. So if you want to be a monster in trapping, you have to have the same mindset. You've got to be determined to be that way. And you also got to be smart enough to realize it doesn't happen by accident. If you want to start revenue streams, you have to be determined that you're going to be good at that. And when you find your weaknesses, you train your weaknesses. Training your strengths, guys, is that's like mental masturbation. It does you no good. You've got to train your weaknesses. That's in business. That's in trapping. That's in marriage life. That's with everything. That's the same thing with if you're deciding that you don't want to be weak and slow anymore, and you want to be strong and nimble. Just think about what you're doing and put everything that you do in the mindset of training. Be willing to do different stuff to learn from it. Be willing to fail. Every SEAL fails, and they learn from it. Every trapper should openly accept that they're going to fail and learn from it. Because if you learn from a failure, you didn't fail. You got free education, brother. That's what happened. Now, this is going to bring into something that I want to talk about that me and Jeff talked about at the school was trust but verify. We didn't use this terminology, but we all heard it from Reagan, and I think it's smart. Guys, season's already on some of you, and it's getting really close to some of you, and you've seen demos, you came to a school, you've got, you know, a DVD through the mail, you've been watching YouTube, listening to podcasts, whatever it is. And you're here, always hearing different things. And depending on how much confidence the person has that's telling you this, or the experience that they have, or whatever the reason is, for some reason, a lot of people want to sell people on how they do stuff. And people buy in. And they go out and they just change everything they're doing to meet a new system. We were very clear. If once you saw my style of setting traps, or the way that I try to control a coyote, don't try to do that 100% on your line. Do it, you know, like 25%. Learn from it as you're still doing what you know how to do and catch animals. So that's trusting but verify. If a new set turns you on so much and you run out there and you just slam it in everywhere, if there's problems with it, now you got to deal with a whole bunch of problems. Do what you need to do, or do what you know how to do to catch those animals, and then learn, as in training, new ways to do it. That's what you should be doing. You never throw away everything that you've done because you get excited about a new method. That's foolishness to do that. Someone has the latest, greatest lure, and that's all you're going to use. Is it going to work good in your area? Is it going to work good the way that you set? Until you test it, you don't know. So don't burn a season because you're being stubborn about something new that you know, and that's in quotation marks, you know is going to work perfectly. Last thing I want to talk about, which you can use in many different things in life, is a logbook. We've all heard trappers talk about this. See, and people use this in a different way. Jeff, from listening to his class, he keeps a logbook of the set, where it is, a lot of different information, then the lure, time of year, and stuff. And he does that regularly. I don't do that. But he can go back and has information that I may not have because I've never done that. And he can tell you maybe this lure does better this time of the year, during breeding season, or whatever it is. I'm pretty good at picking up patterns. I've never really seen the need for that personally, but I can see why he does it. It's smart. I use a logbook in a lot of different ways. See, when I was learning how to catch bobcats, the set that you see me showing at the school or on YouTube or anything like that, that came from me using a logbook. I was having a lot of misses. I was having them come in all different directions. So every set I made, I drew the set, I put the wind, I put where the tracks were, I put where they stopped. And what I started doing is when I kept seeing a pattern over and over again, why is this happening? How can I correct it? And eventually, after about 3 years, the set that I've shown at many demos across the country is the result of a logbook. So many cats stop so far from it. How do we fix it? Cats are coming in from all directions. How do we fix it? The logbook can be used in many different ways. If you're starting a revenue stream and you're meeting customers and they keep balking, well, we'll start writing down where they're balking in the conversation. You're going to find a pattern there where you're doing something that's hurting it. Or you got a bad product, and either way, you're going to learn something. Data within context, with no ego involved, no emotions involved, is massive for learning. See, I had my ideas about bobcats. I was taught from different people about how to catch them. I read about how to catch them. I believed I knew how to catch them. But until I used that logbook, there's no way you'd ever see those pictures of 70, 120, 174 bobcats. Never see it. We'd have never had that set in trapping the way that it is without that logbook. I'd have never understood how to get the cat to step where I want him to step with such precision without that logbook. Never. So if you're having a problem, whether it be trapping, weightlifting, business, your marriage, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, work, start keeping a logbook on what's going on when you're having issues. You'll be amazed at what you see that you never paid attention to. You can use it like Jeff does. You can use it like I've done. I used to do this in the swimming pool business. When I first started building swimming pools for myself, I would go to the same pool quotes where you're trying to get someone to hand you a $25,000 check after an hour of talking to them to build their swimming pool. And for months, I could not get a sale. I was just as skilled as anybody else putting them in. Same quality as putting them in. Probably faster, because I wasn't backed up so much because I wasn't selling any of them at the time. So I started writing down what was being said and when I would get pushback from the customer. Same thing as Jeff does with lures. It's just a logbook. It's like a journal. When I would say certain things and I would see pushback or I would see nonverbal reactions that showed negativity, I wrote it down. And then the next time, I would try to change that because I thought it was good, but apparently they didn't. I would change the wording and the phrasing until I didn't get the pushback anymore. And then I would go to the next pushback, and the next pushback, and the next pushback. Now, lo and behold, that little logbook that no one really seems to think is important anymore, I was selling almost all of the pools within a year. To the point that all these other companies that have been in business way longer than I have, if they wanted work for their guys, they were putting my pools in. Was I a master salesman? No. The logbook showed me what people liked and what they didn't like when it came to making a decision on a swimming pool. I kept refining, training. I kept refining that until all of a sudden now I was hitting about 90% of all the pool quotes I went to, I was selling and walking away with a check. I was never lying to them. I was never feeding them a bunch of BS. All it was verbiage and their mental imagination from what I was saying, whether it was going to be a problem or not. And I slowly worked through that system until I was selling almost all the pools in the area. Think about your own business. I'm going to finish on this because I'm going to talk about something next week on Manstrong that I think is actually really, really smart. And it has to do with your wife, if you're a guy, or your girlfriend, if you're not married, or your partner, if you go that way. I don't care. if there's a lot of dissension inside of the marriage and you can't figure out why, the logbook will show it to you. When you have an argument, be honest, not what you think you wanted to say, but what you actually said and what she said. And when you're not emotional about it, go back and read it. You may find out it's really simple things that are very simple to fix to knock out a whole bunch of the arguing and the drama that's in your marriage. See, that's just like anything else. All that is training. You want to be the best, have the best marriage? You've got to train to do that. Guys and girls do not think the same. We do not talk the same. We do not think words mean the same thing. Emotionally, extremely different. If you're not going to work on your marriage consistently, I promise you, you're either going to be one miserable SOB when y'all get a divorce up to that point, or you're just going to be miserable your whole life, or you're going to end up getting a divorce. And most of the time, it's not that much to make a good marriage. You got to work at it. Training. The SEALs are the best because they look at everything they do in the form of training. And anything that's important to you, if you look at it in the form of training, you will become better at it. You want to be an artist and paint? Train. You want to catch 300 bobcats? Train. You want to be able to bench 500 pounds? You got to train. You want to have a good marriage? You got to train. Anything that's important to you, you need to train. Watching Netflix is not probably something you got to worry about training for. It's not that important either. Sleeping late and being lazy is something you don't have to train for. Eating everything you see with no discipline and getting fatter and fatter every year makes you trapping harder and harder every year. You don't have to train to do that. But if you don't want that to be you forever, you're going to have to switch up a little bit, aren't you? Training is the key in everything. We think of the word as in training in a way that I wish we didn't. Because you think about it in the form of only military, only athletics. Not trapping, not business, not marriage, not shooting so much. Not raising good kids. But it is. So if you want to be the best, become the guy with the discipline to train on what's important to you. And lo and behold, after you start down this path, all of a sudden things are just going to seem easier, more productive, you'll be happier, you won't have so many train wrecks, you won't have so much drama. So you send civilians into a combat situation, it's massive drama. You send highly trained military people into a conflict, it's not that much drama. What was the difference? Training. You want to run a business and you're trying to figure out how to get customers, and no matter what you do, it doesn't work. And then you got another company that's doing the same thing that you are, that's kicking your ass every single day. You want to know what the difference is? Training. You see people with really good marriages and you can't understand how that is. Is it real? Is it fake? You don't know because it's so strange what yours is like. Training. They work at it. That's what I want from everybody that listens to me on these podcasts. I want you to have a better life. I want you to be more successful. I want you to have fun. And things that aren't serious, don't take them serious. And the things that are serious, you train for. Because I know if you'll do that, things will just be better. And that's what I want for anybody that I can help. I want your life to be better. So I'll talk to y'all next week, guys. Figure out what's not going right. Figure out a training plan to correct it. See you next week.